This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
Hello and welcome to the Not Alone podcast. I'm Samuel Fredrickson.
And I'm Jason Moisoso.
Is that how we usually start this?
I believe so.
Okay, cool, cool. Hello, we're back.
Who knows? I can't remember anymore.
Everything is wild.
It's all
and weird.
A blur.
Hello. It's been a minute.
I took a trip to a parallel universe. That was my problem.
Oh, wow.
Oh, we're going to dive into it. Don't worry.
Okay, well, that's a good segue. I don't know how to utilize it, but it's pretty good. Hello, welcome back. We missed you all. We love you so much.
And as another parallel, this is going to be a Jason special.
Yeah, wow,
there
Jason.
We go.
Way to just jump
there
all over
there
it.
There we go.
He is not excited about this. He hates
I'm not
this.
Stoked. I was originally stoked at the idea. Now I'm not super excited.
Jason, can I just tell you that is probably 90% of the topics that we cover on this show is I'm like, ah, this is going to be great.
Yeah, and then it's bad. And then it just makes me sad at the end.
It's just sad. Before we jump into that, and I do just want to jump in and get rolling, I just want to remind everybody that if you are one of our $5 and above patrons on Patreon, we had our monthly special come out this last week. It was on haunted dolls. So if you're interested in hearing about that, I don't know why you would be. And also thank you to all of the people who emailed me identifying themselves as people who voted for the haunted dolls. Now I know who you are. I'm going to do something about that. But in any case, you can go to patreon.com/notalonepodcast to donate there and get access to our bonus material, including monthly episodes to fill the gap between one of the two-week gaps. So
you just need to slam the band hammer. Just ban them all.
That's banned.
It. We're done with you.
Banned. All right. That's my little plug. That's my little announcement. Jason.
Sam.
I asked you to do a special because I didn't want to work this week.
That's
so
totally fair. No, it was a while ago, too.
Take it away.
Today, everyone, I thought it would be nice to talk about fairies. And boy, oh boy, was I wrong.
Why did you think that?
Well, I figured, so I had just finished season 3 of The Magicians on Netflix. And fairies were like a big part of that season.
I've never seen
so
that.
So I was
show.
Like, oh, that's interesting. It's on sci-fi. It's actually pretty good. I enjoy it. But I thought it was kind of interesting on their take of fairies and all the different modern interpretations of fairies. Because, Sam, what do you think of when I say fairy? What is the imagery that comes to mind?
Yeah, that's a good question. At this point, I think mainly of people dancing in a circle in the forest.
Interesting. A lot of people would have said probably Tinkerbell.
I know they would.
Yeah.
But I've done a lot of research into the paranormal.
That's totally fair. And I have played too much magic, and I think of small, almost insect-like humanoids.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? They're kind of creepy.
I hate that.
Well, that interpretation, your interpretation, Tinkerbell, even elves are very fairy-like and have been represented in recent culture as all being fairies, yes.
Okay. The name, I've always wanted to know the answer to this. I should have asked you it specifically because I don't know if you came across it. The name fairy, because I also hear people refer to them as the fair folk. Is that where that comes from? Like they're fair? F-A-I-R?
No.
No.
I'll get
okay.
into that.
All right. Cool. Okay.
So
I'm so
don't
glad.
Worry.
I'm so glad you brought etymology to the table
yes.
for this Jason special.
110%, my man.
All right.
All right. So first things first. Our modern interpretations of fairies, for the most part, boil down to a lot of Irish Celtic ideas. So you brought up people dancing in the woods in a circle.
Yeah.
That is a really common trope, especially in if most of UK variations where people will get kind of taken in by fairy dancing and they kind of have this sense of loss of time and then they come back way later. These kind of teleportations and parallels actually are very, very common in Irish Celtic belief with fairies, that there is a fairy world that you can accidentally stumble into and get lost in. And if you eat the fruit, then you are doomed to be there for all eternity.
That's like one of my favorite motifs is the, and I know we've talked about it a lot over the course of the last 2 years, is the food. Like the, you end up in a weird place, you're disoriented, you don't know what's going on, somebody comes to you with food, you don't eat it. You don't eat it because you have to stay there forever. And this is like paralleled, interestingly enough, in Greek mythology, especially I think it is the story of Hades and Persephone, who Hades kidnaps Persephone. Her mother Demeter goes all over the land looking for her, finally finds her in hell or in the underworld. And she's like, okay, my child, come on, we're going home now. And Hades is like, wow, trump card, you can't, because she ate my pomegranates. That's not a euphemism. And now she has to stay here forever. And then they like work out a deal.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like the food ties you to the land.
Yeah, exactly. It's just so interesting that that's found in such different parts of the world and different cultures.
Well, I mean, when I travel now, I mean, I don't go too far, but when I do, I usually do try to eat local foods and local cuisines, and I can see how one can fall in love with the place and the food.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it kind of makes a little bit of a sense.
I think that.
But other things that we've talked about in the past, besides for parallel universes, we've also talked about changelings, which are a very common trope as well, especially in the European sense of what fairies are and what they do, where they're switching out infants for their own children. And this is a way to, like we've spoken again before, a way to kind of rationalize children getting sick, disease, children dying at young, young ages.
Yeah, that is one interpretation. The other interpretation is that it's true, and that in the works of my very favorite ufologist of all time, Dr. Jacques Vallée, that the fairies are the ETs. They're the same thing, and that they, the ETs and the fairies, walk among us through these changelings.
Sam, you're about 5 minutes ahead of schedule here.
Dang. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry. I'll stop interrupting.
You're okay.
I'm just so excited.
But you ruined my game that I had planned.
Okay, I'll go ahead. I can cut that out.
No. Keep it.
No, I wanted to play a game. Kept. Okay. He wants it kept. It's his special. Go ahead.
Otherwise, finally, I just want to go through a few more pop culture references of what generally most people know about fairies.
Okay.
They are typically humanoid of some sort, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes they're our size. Sometimes they're wee itty-bitty little ones.
Wee little fairies.
Yes. And then a lot of times they get associated with both nature and also having a very fluid emotion to where they can easily get tempered. Tinkerbell was susceptible to that quite frequently, but they're also rather mischievous at times or, on the very parallel, good. There are some like brownies that are meant to be good spirits of the home.
What's a brownie?
A brownie is a fairy of sorts. That is a spiritual entity that is essentially around to do small household tasks.
Huh. Where? What? What culture is that? Also like Celtic? Okay. All right. Cool.
Most of what we think of as small elf slash fairy like creatures is going to be Celtic in origin.
Okay.
Most of the time. Now, I'm not going to go too heavy into the good versus evil, essentially the Seelie versus the Unseelie courts of fairy worlds. Instead, I want to.
You totally
take...
should, though. That sounds amazing. All right.
Maybe eventually.
Fine. Okay.
But what I did want to do, because generally speaking, whenever I do research for this, is I consume a bunch of information about the subject and kind of let myself organically sift through information and go on tangents and then let it stew a bit before I really come down to an idea of what I want to talk about. And this week, I want to talk about really about 500 years of influence from cultural and literature and art that have formed the fairies that we think of today and have also diversified all the classes and how they've really changed throughout our time.
All right. I love that.
You sound okay with that?
I love that.
So I'm not going to get too specific on fairies. And one of the real reasons why I'm not is because of a little game I want to play with you, Sam.
Okay. Yes.
So I'm going to name off a list of different things.
Okay.
You're going to tell me whether or not it's a fairy or not.
Oh. Okay.
I'll start off easy.
Okay.
And then I'll get to a little bit more difficult things.
Okay.
Hey, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Are you really?
I'm here.
Here we go. So, already named them, brownies.
That is a fairy. It's also, I think, a Girl Scout troop. Like,
I wouldn't be surprised.
Before you're a Girl Scout, you're a brownie. So just keep that in mind.
Helpful around the home? Maybe.
Sure. Why not?
Pixies.
Yeah.
Sprites.
Yeah.
Banshees.
No.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
What?
I'll get into that.
Oh, I'm scared now. Okay. I hate banshees.
Leprechauns.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Is all of them a yes?
No.
Is that how this game works? It's one of those? Okay.
Mermaids.
No.
Yes.
What the okay.
Nymphs.
No. Yes. No. What? Okay, so they are all fairies.
Elves.
No.
Yes.
God!
Djinns.
That's a no.
Yes.
And if you say yes, I'm going to fight you, Jason.
Aliens.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so they were all yes.
So this is why...
You lied to me.
This is why I got very frustrated with doing research on fairies, is that there are so many different lists of fairies available to us in different classifications that almost anything that is seen yet unseen in the world can be associated
could
with
be a
being
fairy.
A fairy in the broad spectrum of it. Which makes it really tough to narrow down on anything specific. So this week, that's why, I wanted to do more of a brushstroke, like, attack on fairies in general.
Wide brush, okay.
Exactly. So, because I do know eventually down the line, we'll probably talk more about them in very specific ones a little bit further on. But that's the fun part, is that fairies are pretty much everything.
They're everything,
but
they're
everywhere. But there are some rules to them.
Okay.
I brought one up already. Size is a big issue. Generally, they're not bigger than us, so they're not going to be things like ogres or like cyclopses, which tend to be large beings. They tend to be our size or smaller.
Okay. You know, there are stories of djinn who are like 14 stories high.
Of course.
Okay.
Of course there are.
All right.
And generally speaking, they are some sort of like affiliated with nature.
Okay.
And lastly, generally speaking, they can turn themselves invisible at will.
Oh, good.
So those are the primary rules to being declared a fairy. But that being said, there are definitely ways that you can manipulate that, and they break the rule, just like everything in English. They follow suit.
Okay.
You can break the rule quite frequently. I brought up mermaids, sirens, banshees. All of those beings don't necessarily fit that exact criteria, but depending on what scholar you're looking at, they qualify as being a fairy.
If they're nature-related... our size and can disappear. I think mermaids fit that. I think
close enough.
I think banshees fit that.
So, and I bring up banshees mainly because they also are connected to being a type of spirit as well.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, they allure you in some way. That's why will-o'-wisps are known as fairy lights.
Yeah.
That bring travelers into despair most of the time, death.
Yeah. Or it turns your mom into a bear.
Or they turn your mom into a bear.
Yeah, man.
Okay.
Have you never seen Brave?
No, I haven't
so
seen
good,
Brave.
It's so good, dude. It's so
no,
good.
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God. It's fantastic.
But stories about fairies go back extremely far, and some are still very current. There are a few stories and accounts as early or as recent as the mid-20th century of little green people that help people that get lost in the forest to find their way out.
Okay.
Which I'm... of course, a little suspicious about.
You're on the anti side of that.
I wouldn't call it anti. I just don't... I'm going to look critically at it.
Okay, all right. All right, okay.
So.
All right.
Fairies. They're a whole bunch of different things.
Uh-huh.
Right? But where does the word come from?
Well, I had an idea
that was your
that
big question.
Was wrong, apparently.
It was. It was. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
But fairy is essentially... an adaptation of feta, which is an old Latin word for fate. It's also used...
how's that spelled?
F-A-T-A.
Okay, okay.
It's also used almost interchangeably with Old French for representation of an illusion or enchantment. And then also, fae comes from Old French as well, which is typically a woman that is skilled in magic, typically in some sort of nature-esque aspect. So with like words and stone and herbs.
So like Morgan Le Fay.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about her later on too.
Yes. This is like the best episode ever. Okay, go ahead.
I'm so happy
for loving this, man. I'm sorry you had to go through hell, but this is great for me.
Nah, you're great. And I do want to make it clear that the magic in question does not derive from a satanic source.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like witch magic of the past that we're aware of. And now we're going to dive into how fairies have changed, evolved, been revived throughout the ages.
Okay.
And I want to start first off with the Renaissance.
Mm.
And why I go there is mainly because there is a few different contention points of where the origin of fairies and the fae really come into play. One solid lead in my mind is with Greco-Roman culture.
Okay.
Either being like nymphs, we talked about Pan before,
mm-hmm.
where we have these very creatures of the magical natural world that live outside of society. And when you look at fairies, that's very, very similar. Fairies are, again, on the outside of our civilized life. They are hidden away. They are nature. And in a lot of cases, I read multiple sources that say, in order to protect yourself against fairies, use iron.
Oh, okay.
Which makes some sense. There is another theory about the whole iron thing that's really is on the edge. And I think we definitely need to do a little bit more anthropologic discovery to really talk about it.
Okay.
But it's the idea of another species alongside humanity that lived in Europe that because of the Celts and being able to use iron was able to essentially drive them out and kill them off into extinction. And they're a smaller species.
I love that. Oh,
so
love
there's
that
idea. But I think we definitely need way more evidence to start thinking about that.
Is there like a name for that idea, for that hypothesis?
I didn't come against like a theory of blank.
Okay.
Nothing of that nature quite yet.
All right. I dig it. So fairies are out there.
That's the first qualifier. Yes.
Which is interesting because if you look again from like a mythological dimension, if you look at the work of Joseph Campbell in the hero's journey, the hero's quest, the very first thing, after the call.
Right.
But like the first movement out of his area is called the crossing of the threshold.
Correct. Into nature, into where the wild things are,
yeah.
Into the unknown where you are going to be essentially tested.
Yeah.
Of your person and hopefully you come out changed and bettered for it. Same
I
basic concept.
Joseph
and that's
Campbell.
That goes back to, again, a lot of Greek storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Of the wilds that live outside. And a lot of Greek stories also include quick interactions with things like nymphs and gods and goddesses
mm-hmm.
Because they are, again, in their domain, in nature, outside of what man has created.
Yeah.
And fairies live there too. Another origin point for fairies is the idea that fairies, in order to have the old pagan gods kind of fit into a new Christian monotheistic mm-hmm. realm, got demoted into these lesser magical beings, but still exist and are still connected to our everyday culture.
Yeah.
And everything as well as that. So fairies were still, they're very fluid.
Mm-hmm.
Also, as far as every region you go to, you can pick and pull fairies and their origin out of different aspects of that culture.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what's the fascinating part. But during the Renaissance, again, we have that kind of revival of Greco-Roman ideals and philosophy and artwork and literature.
Mm.
Let's see, what was it? I wrote it down. Oh, shoot, I got to back it up. Oopsies,
you're going to back it up.
I'm going to back it up. I'm going to back it up mainly because one of the first accounts, and I forgot about this for a second, one of the first accounts of fairies was actually during the 12th century, so about 200 years before the Renaissance.
Now, when you say first accounts of fairies, what do you mean?
Written down by a literary scholar.
Okay. All right. Okay, cool.
And that was during the 12th century by, oh gosh, Gervas of Tilbury? I'm going to go with that.
It.
He's an English scholar. He traveled Europe and he came across these accounts of inexplicable marvels of nature. And most of them, in that folklore culture was referencing to some sort of fairy-like being.
Mm.
So there's our first taste. Now I'm going to, again, bump it up a few hundred years.
Not Alone is sponsored by Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. Now, Robinhood has a commitment to making financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy, and that's why when you're using their application, you're going to find a simple and intuitive, clear design. With data that is presented in an easy-to-digest way, the end result is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. And while other brokerages may charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood does not charge commission fees. You can trade your stocks and keep all of your profits. And like I said, it's easy to understand. There are charts, there's market data, and the app is so simplified that you can place a trade in just 4 taps of your smartphone. And if you're not sure what you'd like to invest in, the Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections, things like the 100 most popular stocks, or break it down by sectors, things like entertainment and social media, and even curated categories like female CEOs. And in addition to that, they provide analyst ratings of whether to buy, hold, or sell for every stock. You can learn by doing. You can learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. You can discover new stocks and track your favorite companies with personalized news feeds. And you can receive custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Now, Robinhood is giving all of our listeners a free stock. Now, these aren't some 2-bit penny stocks. This is stuff like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to either help start your portfolio or to continue to build it. Now, you can sign up at alone.robinhood.com. That's alone, A-L-O-N-E, .robinhood.com. Head on over, get your free stock, and start making your money work for you today.
Now we're talking about the Renaissance, and I'm going pretty late in the Renaissance,
okay.
Just before essentially the ending of it. And we're going to talk about Shakespeare for a moment because
who?
Shakespeare.
I've never
William Shakespeare.
Wow.
Yes, you have.
He seems like a cool guy.
Because I'm probably sure you've at least read or maybe even performed Midsummer Night's Dream. There are fairies in Midsummer Night's Dream that tend to muddle in the affairs of humans.
Yeah.
And cause different people to fall in love with other people as a way to solve problems, but essentially makes it more convoluted and messes up, and then eventually they have to fix everything that they did wrong. And this is all but unbeknownst to the actual humans in the play.
Mm, nice.
Because you can't see the fairies.
Yeah.
And it's also a trick on one of the fairy queens
All right. In
order to fall in love with this poor dude that had a donkey head on. It's weird. It's weird.
I love it.
But anyway, this is one of the big, at the time, mainstream, revivals of fairies in culture.
Mm.
And it will continue again a little bit later. But before we get to that, we also want to talk about King James for a second. Because 2 years after Midsummer Night's Dream, and
he's,
I'm sorry, it's not LeBron. Because 2 years after A Midsummer Night's Dream, King James came out with Demonology,
yeah,
which was published in 1597. And he explains demons as being demonic spirits.
Uh-huh.
So, again, we're talking about a spiritual entity in some sort, too.
Yeah, it's interesting because that word demonic, it comes from the Greek daemonios, which, when you're looking at the Bible, where, like, this term is used the most, it's really quite fascinating from, like, a linguistics perspective. Because before that, they didn't necessarily have words like daemonious. But in the Hebrew, what you have is just one word that describes the good spirits, the bad spirits, God himself, and it's Elohim. And so you see Elohim become like 50 different things when the Old Testament is then translated into Greek in the Septuagint, and then that moves forward. And that's where you really get this idea. You kind of hit on it before that, like, the gods of the world, when Christianity came in, they didn't want to just destroy them. They didn't want to just erase them. They wanted to demote them, which is something that the ancient Jews did to their neighboring, like Babylon and Assyria and all of their gods. They like demoted them to being just little punks, basically.
And it It does make sense from a cultural takeover the world kind of aspect, because it's incredibly tough to erase ingrained traditions on new people.
Yeah, and so like
you just can't do that. But if you can change it just slightly to where it still kind of fits in your own story of what your beliefs are, that usually works out a whole lot better in order to control, or not control, but to convert the masses.
Well, and even more than that, to make others' point of object or object of worship, to make that subservient to your own object of worship, it really, I mean, it's a more effective way than just stamping out paganism forever, to like subject it instead of destroy it. It's really quite fascinating. Where that comes into King James is that he was a jerk who killed a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so there you go. That's your timeline there. You've got a lot of like cool words and what words mean. And then King James was just like, I know what a witch is and I'm going to kill one.
Yeah. King James the Merciful doesn't quite seem like a correct association.
He took the subjection and instead was like, no, we're just going to kill everybody and it's going to be fine. So I'm sure our British listeners have feelings on this. I'd like to know what your feelings are on King James. I think that'd be really neat to know. So thank you.
After King James and after the Renaissance, the world, at least the Western world, had the Enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
We had a direct and amazing impact on science.
Yeah.
And we had this great coming of age with science and math and learning all around and being scholarly. And that killed a lot of
superstition
in the culture previously. Now, what always happens is that there's some sort of bounce back. After the Enlightenment, we had the Romantic era.
Mm-hmm.
Romanticism essentially was a calling back to the pre-Enlightenment, back to Renaissance-like ideas, mm-hmm. and was artwork that was in literature that was focused on nature.
Mm-hmm.
There was amazing landscape paintings done at the time, and they revisited a lot of the, and that's why I think Romanticism came in, was this this growing love for what isn't math and science.
A return to the soul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we revisited a lot of the same ideas of the Greco-Roman influences that influenced the Renaissance back in the Romanticism era as well. And during that time, two big things happened for fairies. First off, the rise of the legend of King Arthur.
Nice. Yeah.
The king who once was and the king who shall be.
The once and future king. Yeah.
So we have this increasing growth in the retelling of the legend of King Arthur, not, I'm sure, having to coincide with the fact that printmaking was so much easier to do after the Enlightenment. King Arthur himself, we already talked about, you mentioned her once, Morgan Le Fay, which is in direct, from her name, a direct connection to the Fey world, the fairy world, and magic in this hidden realm. In fact, after King Arthur's death, in a lot of the tales, he goes to Avalon.
Mm.
Avalon has been interchanged with the fairy world multiple times, and I feel like that's kind of where at the end of Lord of the Rings, where the elves go off and so does Frodo.
The Grey Havens.
That has the same exact feeling of not really death, but a moving to a parallel universe, this other world.
A transcendence.
That sits alongside our own, but is in some way better in all regards.
Yeah.
Also during this time point, because of, like I said, the where the word fairies come from, this idea of enchantment also plays interchangeably with fairies as well, which becomes later more and more noticeable with the second thing that happened in the 1800s. In 1812, the Brothers Grimm, Children's and Household Tales was first published. Now, that was the actual name originally. It was not the Grimm Fairy Tales.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, they became associated with that because, once again, fairies and enchanted tales became interchangeable with one another. And then they started becoming more and more prevalent towards the turn of the 20th century. Also, though, some fun stuff was happening during the late 19th century, where scientists still wanted to hold on to the idea of these little beings that are around in nature. And there's a few people that kind of associate with them with doing the same task that bees and butterflies did of helping to pollinate the flowers and the plants of the world, which was, of course, later completely destroyed. But it was this weird part of trying to take a cultural reference and trying to make it fit into a different story and trying to make it fit into the scientific story.
My favorite thing is when is that hazy period, like after the Enlightenment, and especially you see it like especially with Queen Victoria and Victorianism, where science was like so groovy that everybody was like, all right, instead of using science as a way to explain the world that we are discovering now, we're going to take the world as it has been and use science to explain that. So like taking fairies, taking things like spiritualism and like magic. I just love it when scientists try to do that. It doesn't really happen as much anymore. Nowadays, we call that pseudoscience.
Yeah, but that's the great thing. And we keep talking about it over and over. But the Victorian era, and again, also the Romantic period of the earlier 1800s, like this time is very important for art and literature and pop culture. This is where the seeds get sowed for what we have today.
And in America, we are just killing each other.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, that's what we do best. Anyway, moving up the timescale a little bit, the most important thing to shape, at least in Western eyes, what a fairy is, came out in 1911, and that is Peter and Wendy.
Peter and Wendy? Oh, yes. Really?
That's the original title for Peter Pan.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And the world fell in love with Tinkerbell. For some reason.
I understand. I remember being a kid watching
gives
Peter Pan.
Us, and the success of that book, it got translated into, actually, I think it was actually a screenplay first and then became a book and then was transformed into a musical, which had great success in the Americas, or at least in the US. And then Disney picked it up and just ran with it. So the widespread success that was laid down by the Brothers Grimm fairy tales in the early 1800s picked up with the post-ish spiritualism of the early 20th century and took off with Peter Pan and Wendy and the story of the Lost Boys.
Nice.
Now, a little bit after that, we have Tolkien recreating elves, which again became another kind of change to the narrative of what, like, for example, a nymph was. They're similar-esque. They are an enlightened being, almost perfect, which is very akin to the elves of Nordic tradition, and which have also taken different shapes over the centuries. One of the more recent ones was very, very Tolkien-esque, where they are also like essentially in between an elf that we think of today and nymphs of Greek culture, to where they are enchantresses. They are something dangerous to deal with, but also incredibly beautiful and almost perfect beings.
Yeah, and they have all these magical powers. They can appear and disappear. They live in the mountains. Yeah, dude.
And my favorite thing about fairies, especially in the early 1900s, was what happened in 1917. And a great, great illustration of how easy it was to pull off a hoax.
Is it the Cottingley photographs? Yeah.
The Cottingley photographs.
This is really just a great example of the way that really smart people can be really dumb. And just because a smart person says they believe in something doesn't make it true.
And that smart person that Sam is referring to is Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who is the
author. You
want to
try that one more time?
No.
Okay.
Conan Doyle?
You said Arthur Conan Doyle.
Perfect.
I love that.
Words. Anyway, the author to Sherlock Holmes.
Okay.
And he was also a physician at the time as well. But I think what it really does is illustrate how much we want things to be.
Yeah.
Yep. Shows how much we want to believe in things and hold on to them. Because he was convinced about these photographs, and there was only one photograph that was initially released, but it was taken by Elsie Wright and Francis Griffith of Cottingley, England.
Mm.
And it showed one of the girls essentially surrounded by these small fairies in a garden.
Mm.
Very straightforward. It was, for the most part, a portrait of her. So very much just basically a headshot surrounded by these little fairies. But again, it was convincing enough for people to start talking about them again,
mm-hmm.
to the point where it became, again, this like revitalization of a fairy and what the fae are. Unfortunately, it was a big ol' hoax.
Mm-hmm.
Four more images were put out eventually. The girls themselves did declare four out of the five as being hoax, but the last one to be authentic. Now, the fun part about that is, well, we have really good CGI techniques now,
mm-hmm.
and it's pretty easy for us in this day and age to be like, that's totally wrong. That looks horrible.
Mm-hmm.
What they actually were essentially copies on cardboard of fairies from a popular children's coloring book at the time.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah. And you can absolutely tell from the images, they are very two-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very two-dimensional. It's laughable for our day and age to say those were real, but that's the power of photography.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also the power that photographers have to trick you.
Yeah.
And I think it's very, very interesting to see, again, like we're talking about early 1900s. We're still holding on to these,
mm-hmm.
these beliefs that throughout the years have been dealt away, that we've put away in our past, but we mm-hmm. keep bringing back out because we're not enjoying what we're experiencing because today.
We want it.
And I think that's happened yet again, because as of now, we see rise in neo-pagan beliefs where we are harkening back to being more in touch with nature once again.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of fairies have diversified immensely, and we keep changing them and using them in storytelling.
Yeah, yeah.
And that in itself has created its own subculture.
Yeah.
There are so many different websites that are dedicated and YouTube channels that are dedicated to all these different fairy things. And they are so contemporary
uh-huh.
of what the ideas of fairies are. And it's just interesting how much this has expanded through the internet.
Just up the road from here, I don't know if you've ever been there, there's this really fantastic little store called Crone's Cupboard. Have mm-hmm. you ever been there?
No.
It's something else, man. It's for all intents and purposes, it's a magic store. Like Wicca and neo-paganism, and they have like different fairy sculptures and like different ways to invoke spirits and fairies and like different rocks you can use. It's super cool. Like it's mm-hmm. really neat. I think it's so interesting, and like the fairy is in and of itself, as you've made the point, an excellent illustration of this back and forth that humanity does and has always done between the completely rational, completely literal, quote unquote, real world, scientific based. Our science changes, you know, from time to time, quite a bit, but like we understand more and we know more, but we use those principles to rule our lives and run our lives. And then after a period, it kind of swings the other way. And then you get to this point of saying, well, we're sick of that. We need some more magic in our life or anything like that. And then you get to
we lose something.
We
and then
lose
we try
things.
Desperately to recapture it.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it is that kind of revolt against civilization
yeah.
that we take in order to reclaim it.
Yeah. And I think we are. I think that we're, because like, here's the thing, right? If I was to say to you, like right now, Jason, there are fairies out there, like you and I would probably go, oh, ha, 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 no, that's preposterous. Other people might believe in a literal fairy, and that's totally fine and good. But what I think happens is as the fairy motif and other magical motifs find their way more and more into our literature, and it becomes more common of a subject and a concept, maybe we don't find ourselves again believing in actual fairies, but it brings in this mysticism, and it brings in like this idea that the world does have its own kind of magic to it,
yeah.
and that things don't always work just like we think. And I really think that we're kind of in that swing. So I don't know. It'll be yeah. interesting to see.
I read a quote unquote article of research, I would probably say it was a published article
okay
that was trying to scientifically explain our belief system in fairies. It was about an hour and a half of my life that I'll never get back, and it really did not surmount to a whole lot of actual hard science, which is unfortunate. But I played around a little bit more, and I dug deeper into looking to like fairies and pollination and things like that.
Oh, okay.
And I found a lot for fairy gardens.
Which,
needless to say, they attract a lot of butterflies. Fairy gardens and the flowers that are recommended are very attractive for pollinators, including butterflies and bees. And it makes a lot of sense. Again, it's these small creatures that impact our world that have that kind of connectivity to us, but they go still unseen yet seen at times as well.
Even to take that, you know, back to like the Midsummer Night's Dream that you were talking about, where the fairies or the hidden folk, they come in and they make humans fall in love and stuff like that. And then if you think about it, right, like what's the time that people fall in love and babies are made and stuff? It's the springtime, you know? And so in that way, like,
the world is awake.
Yeah. In that way, yes, these bees are fairies. Like these bees are impacting. I just heard the wildest thing in the world earlier today about how our environment is not static. I think that so often when we look at science and rationalism, not that there's anything wrong with it. I think we're both, maybe Jason a little more so, but we're both fans and admire science. But when it can lead incorrectly to the idea that like it is how it is, things do not change, things have always been. And I think that's important to juxtapose with like an understanding of how, like a correct scientific understanding of like how we impact our environment and vice versa. So what I heard earlier today is that the Dust Bowl, right, which caused the Great Depression or was a huge factor in it, was in no small part caused by the huge amount of slaughter of buffalo in North America when settlers moved west, because the buffalo's feet were
manifest destiny.
Well, they were, the buffalo's feet were so perfectly made or evolved that they punctured the ground in ways to aerate it. And so to take from 75 million buffalo to just a few thousand buffalo over the course of that migration west.
That goes to show how temperamental, like, eco-cultures are, like like biomes are.
I know.
In general, because everything hinges on one another.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything evolves to its environment, including plants.
Yeah.
So if you take away something that the plants have been able to depend on in order to expand and grow and keep the soil solid,
yeah,
then you start to get that degradation and
that,
you start getting
that change,
the dust. Yeah. I watched a really,
it blew my mind.
I watched a really interesting video. It was someone trying, it's like engineering problems or something like that, where someone was like, okay, this, if we were to fight climate change and CO2 emissions with forestation, and if we took the two largest deserts in the world and completely planted them with trees,
okay,
what are the best trees to use as far as water consumption, a tree per essentially area unit, stuff like that. And after all said and done, he also went through things that I didn't even think about. The biggest one was with the Sahara, and how much of the sand that gets picked up and travels across the Atlantic Ocean, because the dust, the rainforest has the Amazon rainforest has the purest air. It rains all the time because the air is so clean.
Yeah.
The only thing that water really has to hold on to is actually a lot of the sand particles that make their way from the Sahara.
That's wild.
And that's how rainfall occurs so frequently, is because when you have so few particles in the air, condensation occurs on those particles in particular. So when you have a higher pollution in the air, it won't rain as often.
Wow.
because there's nothing they're able to hold on to all kinds of different things. Yeah. So they don't get too heavy.
So it doesn't fall. Yeah.
And then that in itself was like, whoa, that was mind blowing. It was like, yeah, even if we did something that sounds like an amazing idea.
Yeah.
And would be one of the, like, the greatest technological wonders of our generation, maybe even humanity in general.
Yeah.
The two biggest impacts is the fact that we are really getting rid of all that sand that is actually moving around the entire yeah. world. And also, of course, we're salinating a lot more water. Because where are we going to, how are we going to water all these plants? Yeah. Well, it's desalination plants is probably the biggest option and the only viable option. Well, you're artificially increasing the salt content of water, especially shoreline regions, that will absolutely destroy sea life as well. So it's this, isn't again, amazing, like the balance, man, of how these small changes and these small impacts completely have a different outcome than what we might foresee.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That we might foresee. Like, we can plan all of this and then do some. And I think that that's the spirit.
And nature still is nature. It's still yeah. wild. It still has these variables that we can't always predict.
You can totally understand when you hear something like that. It's so easy for me to understand, like, where this idea comes from, of like these little workers or these invisible workers who are pollinating or whatever, and like forming and shaping the world, because it's like, that's wild. That's insane. And it really makes you think of, like, I'm pretty sure it's, I mean, I don't know if it's in vogue or not anymore, but it used to be. And it's like this theory of, like, the Gaia theory, which is that, like, the Earth is an evolving organism in its own way. Like, yes, it's all of these different things, but we as humans are manifestations of the Earth through its own evolution to create these perfect systems and perfect ways of being until the Earth itself evolves into, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, it's, I mean, amazing.
There is so much evolution in life on Earth and in so many very particular biomes that it's insane. I watched another video recently about subterranean bacteria.
Okay.
So I'm talking about bacteria that grows incredibly deep under the ground. And we have done a lot of new research on them, and they have they are the most diverse species. People are relating it to, like, a rainforest scenario of diversification of all these, well, microorganisms, basically bacteria for the most part, living deep underground without light, and it's incredible. But the most startling number that they gave to me was the fact that as of right now, our current estimations of how much life there is just underground, underneath yeah. our feet, is equivalent to 2 times the volume of all the world's oceans.
What the flip?
And we're talking about organisms that are microscopic. That's insane. I can't fathom that size.
It's magic, man. Yeah. Like, that's it, man. It's magic. Magic is real. And it's like the way that the world is magic. Oh, dude, it's amazing. Anyway, I'm so hyped on all this, man.
A bit
I'm sorry.
Off topic there, I'm but glad it was, we did. That it was awesome. A great discussion.
All right, go ahead.
But that actually is my recap.
Oh, okay.
That is
fair.
My overview of fairies for everyone. Of course, dive deeper into any fairy that you think is interesting, because I'm sure you can learn a lot more. But I wanted to get some structural reference to a cultural representation of fairies and how they have evolved to fit not only storytelling needs, but also how they have evolved with different religions and also more globalization.
Yeah.
They're freaky, man.
Dude, that's so beautiful, man. I love that. Wow. Thanks, Jason. That was probably my favorite special ever. Like,
you say that.
I know I say that every time, and every time it's true, might I say.
I was the only thing that I didn't bring up, and I kind of breezed over, is besides for them being mischievous, they're usually called the good folk or the wee folk.
Yeah,
mainly because
the fae folk, the fair folk.
It's very superstitious to call fairies by their actual names.
Oh no.
So that is essentially invoking their wrath.
Then why like did we Voldemort. Do that for the last hour?
Because I want to get some real fairies on film, bro.
I know. You're the kind of guy who would happily be murdered bear. By fairies so long as you could
physical
realize
evidence.
That, yeah, fairies are real. Like, we come up, oh, it looks like he was stabbed by 500 tiny spears.
Weird.
What is this? But even then, other Jason, living Jason out there in the world would come find dead Jason's body and be like, nah, man, it's just like some kind of weird ant. And he'd be right because the ant is the fairy.
Who knows?
Wow.
Who knows?
That was magical, son. That was magical.
Yeah, you just went crazy there.
I
should have been magical.
Mind.
It better have been.
Yeah, man. Cool. I don't really know what else to say. We had people, so every month on the Patreon, if you're a patron, you get to like suggest topics and like vote for what you want us to do. And so a lot of people suggested fairies over the last 2 months. And so I didn't want to do that for the patrons only. I wanted to do it.
Is that how I got that on my mind?
I think it is.
Let's talk about fairies, I guess.
I think it
sure,
is.
Sure, people
yeah.
want it. Let's talk about them.
Yeah, no, because it was like I showed you the poll or I showed you something that people were voting on or suggesting. And then like a week later, you were like, hey, man, I'm going to talk about fairies. I was
all
like,
right,
okay, cool.
Do it.
I assumed that that's why you did this. Maybe not.
It's probably that. And again, like I said, pop culture.
Subconscious magic. Yeah.
The fairies. They did it to me.
Yep. They whispered into your ears. What's...
Oh, one
what's
last
like,
thing.
Yeah,
one
okay,
last thing.
Okay.
Fairy rings.
Yes! Yes!
Fairy rings is literally just a species of mushroom that when it gestates? Germinates?
Germinates, I think.
Essentially, you have the mushroom spore. Once it finds suitable ground, it shoots off essentially like a root system in all directions and then starts growing upward. And that's why you get rings. It is literally just a mushroom.
But it's still pretty wild.
It's cool. It's really, really interesting. But yes, it's literally just a species of mushroom. I'm sorry. Everyone, fairies did not put that there. They are not portals.
Okay. But who's to say? Who's to say? No. Your science can tell us what happens and how it happens, but it can't explain why it happens.
Maybe a fairy put the spore there.
Exactly. It could be a portal. And in fact, I would urge all of you
to stand in as many fairy rings as you can.
Go in as many fairy rings as you can. Don't eat the food, right? We talked about that.
Or do. I hear Fairyland is a magical place.
So that's the thing, right? It seems like a pretty dope place to go.
It reminds me a lot of like a Garden of Eden type location.
Yeah.
Where it is.
It's perfect.
Not necessarily like. Like it's not a bad place, and it's not, I wouldn't say it's heaven, but it seems like a better version of our world.
I think that the only reason why one would not want to stay in Fairyland should they find themselves there is because of their attachments here on Earth, like, or here, it's all on Earth, here in human
land. I would
land.
Assume it's family.
Yeah, family.
Like our emotional connections with people.
So this is what I have to this is what I recommend for all of our listeners, which is break off every relationship you have.
Every personal connection.
Every one of them.
And then go
mourn
explore
them.
Ireland?
Yep, mourn them first. Take 2 or 3 years. Cry every day. That's fine. And then go into the woods. And in the woods, you'll find all sorts of things.
Mushrooms, primarily.
Cross the... yes.
You'll become a hermit. And
cross
then...
the threshold.
And then everyone will think you're a witch.
Hmm.
I keep remembering.
Damn, that's like the third one more thing. I love it. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
So I talked about a lot of the different origins of them, but one other Christian-esque justification for fairies and how they came to be was they can be spirits that are neither too bad for hell or too good for heaven, so they're locked into our still mortal plane.
Huh.
Or angels that were not bad enough for hell and okay. also still not good enough for heaven, so okay. they get casted down to Earth. So what? There's also this like weird Earth is a middle place
yeah.
aspect where That's, you have to deal with mortal efforts.
That's very like Gnostic. That's very like the rejection of the material for the immaterial, right? Because the idea is that like the material is corrupt and corruptible, and therefore the material is something bad and something to be disdained, and it is only the immaterial that is incorruptible and that is like good and pure and true. And so like that makes sense that they would be beautiful people and that they would be like unto perfect and all of that. I think that robs it though of that magic, that interconnectedness that I think
represents. Soils it a bit.
Yeah,
it really does.
Yeah, it does. It says like, oh, well, these are just prisoners, basically. They're prisoners who have to live here because
they don't have their option. It was decided for them.
Exactly. The entire psychological and motivational makeup of the creature being described as neither too good nor too bad would be something that is very indifferent, something that like doesn't care enough to be anything. And so that doesn't really mesh well with the idea of them being very temperamental and very like hot and cold at the same time, and like the moving about and the energy.
Yeah, I like to think of them as again kind of like chaotic nature in general.
Yeah.
These variables that we don't quite understand, and kind of the ruthlessness that nature can have upon us when we venture out into it.
Exactly. It's that crossing of the threshold, and like that's what waits for you there.
It always is.
Yes. I love that. Heck yeah. Is there any last? I know you.
That's it. That's okay. It. I promise. I'm done.
I just wanted to be sure.
I'll leave it in the debrief for everyone else to hear.
Yeah, yeah. Well, our intro today was Sam recapping the Oscars for Jason. So our debrief will be, who knows? I would say fairies, but it probably won't be because we just do whatever. So yeah,
I'm pretty sure I'm on empty now.
That's totally fine. Okay. So we'd like to thank some of our new patrons. I believe we ended with this person, but I'm going to go ahead and start with him just in case. We'd like to thank Jacob Kump.
Woo, Jacob!
We'd like to thank Anthony Askey.
Yeah, all right, Anthony.
We'd like to thank Claire Palmer. Okay, woo, Claire. We'd like to thank Charlia Wilkins.
Yeah, all right, Charlia.
What?
Wait, was it Charlia?
Charlia Wilkins, I believe. All right, so, Charlia.
Okay,
it's two names.
Okay.
It's three names. I'm going to go with Chara. All right, okay, all right, Chara. this one's pretty easy. Bizquick. We'd like to thank Bizquick.
Okay.
Nice. Bizquick. We'd like to thank Luke Reiser.
Woo-hoo.
Hey, Luke. And we'd like to thank Lori Fetter. Thank you, Lori. Guys, thank you all so much for donating, contributing to the podcast. It really keeps the lights on. It really keeps us going. And it's just a fantastic way of knowing that we matter to you people and that you appreciate what we're doing.
Whoa. You people.
You people. like I said, we do our monthly bonus episodes for our $5 patrons and above. For $3 patrons, you get the episode usually a few days early, and it's like uncut, unedited. So that's either good or bad. Yeah.
And all the dead air.
Well, I usually try to get the dead air out. It doesn't always work. But yeah, and at the end of the day, while we hope that you get value out of those rewards, we are really just grateful to the end of our days. So we'd also like to thank, we got a few new people who gave us podcast reviews.
Oh, no.
We'd like to thank JL4004. We'd like to thank FidGaff. We'd like to thank CCBC Student. We'd like to thank Keith Bush. We'd like to thank Developer. And we'd like to thank Lethal Cheese Whiz.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. And that's the one we're going to go ahead and read.
Is it just a whole lot of like Cheese Whiz sounds?
Yeah, that's something you can easily
and
type.
Then, at the end.
I've died. Lethal Cheese Whiz writes, 93 episodes later, I heard about you guys from a coworker back in late December, early January, and I binged all of your episodes while at work and at my parents' house while packing my stuff. I like the fact that you guys are both skeptics. Skeptics and believers. Okay. Let me re-say that. I like the fact that you guys are both skeptics and believers, bringing the perfect balance to the show.
I like how that you stopped right after Skeptics, as in like you were personally hurt by it. And you've already read this.
Well,
did you not already read this review?
Have I read this review?
Not out loud to all of us, but I'm assuming because you chose this review, I did not read it
ahead of time.
Okay.
I usually will like scan them as I'm going.
Professionalism.
Yep. and go from there. So we just want to thank all of you. We are at 486 ratings in the iTunes store. So like if 15 of you could go out and give us even a, you know what, for these ones, guys, if you want to give us a 3-2-1 star review, I don't care, as long as it gets us over 500 ratings total. I think that's really gonna be something neat. But if you'd prefer to not do that and give us a 5-star rating, that's fine, whatever, we love you.
I would just follow your
endlessly
heart.
Follow your heart. We're like 2 years into this. Would you say that you are more or less skeptical than when we started?
More on everything.
Really?
Borderline cynical.
Damn.
And that's what I'm trying to stay away
from. That's like the opposite of what I had hoped would happen and what I think most of us had hoped. I would say that I am also more skeptical, but it's like taking that skepticism and using it as a way of making the ones that I believe all the better. Before, when I believed everything, it was just like, this guy's on Alien. Of course he's on Alien. And now, once I get through like the initial skeptical checks that come up, and it's still like dinging my bell, so to say, I don't know why I said that, it really just resonates a lot more and makes me believe even more in like the wildness of reality, because you filter out all of the rest of it. But
yeah, well, I enjoy the thought experiments of a lot of things that we talked about and the cultural implications. I think a lot of what we talk about just like affects us in ways that we don't consciously realize.
Yeah.
And shapes a lot of what we actually deal with and what we see in media and the other information that we consume. And I find that so interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I drink black coffee.
I love it. We're 2 years into this. We're still mispronouncing at least 14 words an episode. So
we've gone down.
Yeah,
that's great.
Get used to that. We are still not going anywhere. We will be here probably for a while.
Ooh, I know what I'm going to talk about in the debrief now.
Okay. And with that, I'd just like to say that you can find me on Twitter. I forgot I had to do the thing. You can find me on Twitter at BeerLordElfBane. You can find Jason on Twitter at
MightyMoit.
You can find us on Facebook at Not Alone Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Not Alone Podcast. You can find us. We got a Facebook group. It's Remember We Are Not Alone, a community for the strange. You can email us, I guess, like if you want to. I can't guarantee I'm going to email you back. We can talk about some of the emails I've gotten in the debrief as well. In any case, I love you. I'm going to say it's Jason's turn to do it.
I think it is.
Because I don't want to, and it's a Jason special.
That's fair. Remember, whether you're following lights in the dark forest, or you've come across fruit that looks a little strange, you are
not alone.